Now I eat humble pie.
I'm telling you, I was the king of Spain.
Now I eat humble pie.
And now I work at the pizza pizza.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, right. It is time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. That's pretty great for something you literally pulled out on your way out the door this afternoon.
It's good to be familiar with your basic Canadian a cappella slash pop groups, in this case, Moxie Fruvis.
Moxie Fruvis.
If I had not gone to college and sung in an a cappella group in southern Canada, that being upstate New York, I would never probably have known about Moxie Fruvis, but fortune once again smiles on Eric Meehan when he's forgotten the...
What was the name of your a cappella group?
We were the Buffers. Laugh it up.
I love it. No.
It gets worse. Because, of course. Now, Hamilton College is a very fine institution.
Yes.
There was a major musical written about it. Not true. I've actually never seen Hamilton, which is really sad. I think I'm the only graduate of that alma mater that's never seen the musical bearing the name. It's not known except in hockey, rock and roll,
yes,
including Ben Bishop. Yay. But it's not known for sports, and so it's not a particularly intimidating, you know, with the Continental is the mascot. And
is that the Christopher Walken character on Saturday Night Live?
It's embarrassing. It's just awful. Anyway, so the school colors are buff and blue. That's right. What is buff, you might ask? It's sort of a cream, an eggshell, if you will.
A crew.
That's right. I believe it is featured in the really, really big Crayola set.
But they got that over to Sherman Williams?
That's right, AC Moa. So that's where it comes from. But we still had a rollicking good time gathered around the old piano and breaking it. In fact, in point of fact, my a cappella group was the reason that a cappella groups at Hamilton for a long time did not have access to the official music practice rooms.
My wife will hear songs from the 80s.
Yeah.
And will say, oh, well, that's what the original sounded like.
That's right.
Why? Well, I only knew the a cappella version.
True story, I didn't know Stray Cat Strut. I knew the Princeton Strut. The Princeton Strut was a mockery of Princeton put out by the UPenn Penn 5000. That's embarrassing, but it's true.
But I
can sing every single line, every harmony part to Africa. So I am a force to be reckoned with at karaoke.
I love the a cappella show that was on NBC for a few years that Ben Folds hosted.
Oh, I actually never watched that.
That was great.
Like, here's the thing about me. Like, I'm such a fraud, especially since I'm supposed to be talking about wine. I'm talking about these things. I'm a fraud. So I sang opera. I rarely went to opera. I couldn't, people would come up to me and like try to geek out, like, dude, did you hear, you know, so-and-so's latest release of the Liederkranz and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, but I did just buy the new Tool album and stuff like that. And same thing with a cappella. People would go like, dude, we're going to like the a cappella jam fest. You know, it's going to be like 80 groups. And I'm going to be like, cool.
Moxie Fruvis is there.
I'm going to go see Tool. And it's like, I think that's kind of what made me survive music, is that like I never got cornered in. I just like making it. So
that's why we love you here.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
You are a well-rounded, you're a Renaissance man.
I'm a Renaissance man. I can put up plywood with the best of them in front of windows. I can BS about wine. Yeah, I got skills.
No question.
By the way, Paula Poundstone is my favorite guest you ever have. Ever. I can't miss anything. I cry when she's on. Mainers or Cake Makers, by the way. That's how she started off. I'm like, yeah, man. That's obviously what we're known for.
Right.
No, she's tremendous. And that's good. That's good stuff. My wife will see me crying, like laughing, like pushing the push mower, and she'll know I'm listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Mm-hmm. That's without a doubt. You would be a marvelous guest on that.
Fun.
So let's talk about wine. Let's not talk about shot up windows or
a
cappella. It's been 2 weeks now, because of course you were on vacation last week, but I'll remind everybody that this month we're talking about the Iberian Peninsula. So that's Spain and Portugal, And I always have to talk about, I do this segment that I call the Tempranillo Belt and the Frenchianization of Spain. And what do I mean by that? I don't know. It's not true. I know. I know exactly what I mean. So we have talked a lot on this show about the greatest gift that North America ever gave Europe, which was the phylloxera louse, which killed 99% of their vineyards. Sorry, Europe. And that was in the 1850s, 1860s, 1870s. And that caused waves of migration. I mean, you really do need to understand that the agribusiness in general and the viticulture business specifically in Europe is and has been huge for hundreds of years. There are major banking concerns that when the phylloxera louse killed all the... went under. They had so much money tied up in the wine industry. Of course, if you think about it, you know, the wine industry is not merely grapes. It's everything up the chain from that. It's all of a sudden you've got glass manufacturers not selling bottles. You've got, transportation companies not transporting anything. You've got workers who just have no idea what to do. And what happened in France, which is really where the ugliness started, is there was a wave of migration basically every out of France. And one of the major destinations was the Iberian Peninsula. There are parts of the Iberian Peninsula that were very resistant to the phylloxera louse because of both the coldness. It's important to remember that Spain is the second highest in altitude country in Europe, second only to Switzerland. And there's a lot of very sandy soils that were inhospitable to the louse in general. So there are a lot of pre-phylloxera type places in Spain. And so the French, when they migrated south, as you recall, the Pyrenees block most of the passage into Spain. And last time we were gathered, we talked a little bit about Catalonia and the passage there along the Mediterranean coast. And so today we're going to talk about the French immigrants that came down through the Basque region on the other side, on the Atlantic coast, and came into Spain, basically from the sort of northern central region. And they filtered down, again, through this Basque region and down into the regions of Navarra, Rioja, some went as far as Madrid, which is why I came up with the idea of King of Spain, because today we're going to be drinking a wine from the Madrid area. And then what they did there was they introduced very Frenchy concepts of two things: A, blending, and B, barrel aging. And so, especially in the regions of Navarra, Rioja, and then following the Douro River, almost, and this is why I call it the Tempranillo Belt, it's almost like a bandolier, if you can picture that, coming off the shoulder and kind of swooping across the chest of the Iberian Peninsula and going down, again, Navarra, Rioja, going into Ribera del Duero, Toro, and then crossing over the Portuguese border and going in, down into Alentejo and places like that in Portugal. So the Tempranillo grape became very, very important. It was used heavily in blending about 100, 150 years ago in these regions, especially in the region of Rioja. In fact, there's a treatise that was written about 110 years ago now that talked about the 81 different grape varietals that you saw in Rioja. And unfortunately, something else that sort of came with the recovery from the phylloxera epidemic when it did come is that the need for practicality kind of intervened. And also industrialization started very, very heavily. So if you think about the end of the phylloxera period really being sort of the end of the 1800s and then leading into ultimately was a very war-torn century, but in the Industrial Revolution was happening and, the two sort of fed off of each other. And so as there was recovery along this Tempranillo Belt, you still had that French idea of barrel aging, but you also had, unfortunately, the ripping out of a lot of those blending grapes that was sort of taking place around that time. And you saw the planting of the Tempranillo grape. Why are they planting the Tempranillo grape, and why is it still so important in Spain? It goes back to that idea of the fact that the altitude makes it a very, very cool region. And people think of Spain as a very hot area. And indeed, along the coast and, you know, in the Balearic Islands of Mallorca, Menorca, Ibiza, and certainly down towards, Malaga and the Straits of Gibraltar. Yes, it's hot there, but much of the country is very cool. And I have often told the story about how a group of us Mainers were over there in late February, and we all sort of packed for moderate temperatures. And it was not just cold, but it was cold for unseasonably cold there. And we were, we're people used to chilliness. It was not pleasant. So they planted the Tempranillo grape because it has a faster ripening season. It can become fully ripe in ways that a lot of the grapes that we would think of that would benefit from heat, you know, your Cabs, your Zinfandels, your Merlots, you don't see a lot of that. You do see a little bit of Merlot in Navarra, but basically that's it. And the other grapes that they still play with are mostly native varietals that tend to work in that environment. So the grape the wine we're drinking today is indeed Tempranillo. It is Flaco Tempranillo. It's one of my favorite little Tuesday night wines. It's not an expensive wine at all. As I said, this is from the area that is known as Vinos de Madrid. Lots of stuff comes from this area. They make a lot of wine. They make a lot of grapes that get turned into brandy because they're not that good. But this happens to be from an old family estate that just happens to be in this area that makes sort of inexpensive wine. So it's great for us because although this is a good wine from that area, it's not an expensive wine for us here in America.
Very nice.
Yeah, super tasty. So I am running out of time. Next week, we will talk a little bit about some other important Spanish grapes and touch on Portugal as well. I did want to mention this Thursday, two things going on. Not only do we have the tasting at the store from 5 to 7, which will be, we will have a guest, my friend Jason Sheridan. Jason works for the South Portland Wine Company. They are distributors of some of the nicer wines that you will find in our store. Really excellent hand-selected stuff. We're going to be tasting, among other things, an Uruguayan Albariño of note. So kind of some interesting, cool stuff. And then my band, 161, or at least three-quarters of 161, you can do the math, I don't want to, is going to be playing for the in Pickering Square for the Cool Sounds. So Thursday from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., you can catch some, and we're going to be doing an acoustic, just some kind of classic hits and fun stuff. And we'll throw in a little hip hop because, you know, I'm good like that. I do pull off an impressive ride with me, so you should come down. So come on out for that. So again, 5 to 7 at Bangor Wine and Cheese will be our monthly tasting featuring my buddy Jason. And then my band, or at least again, 3/4 of us acoustically, down at the Cool Sounds concert from 6:30 to 7:30. It'll be a lot of fun, and I will talk to you here next week as well.
Fabulous. Cheers. Thank you, Eric. Garrett Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, Bangor. Message in the Bottle every Tuesday.